Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Tammy, it's good to see you again.
Yes, you too.
It's been a few years since we recorded the episode about Tom. So it's exciting to catch up with you again and hear your story. There's going to be a lot of folks listening to this episode that probably did not hear our episode on the Hunter Conservationist podcast. So folks, you'll be able to follow up after this one for a more lengthy conversation with Tammy Leonard on the Hunter Conservationist podcast. I'm just trying to remember, it was around episode 43, I think, somewhere in there. So
yeah, I was going to say 45, so we're pretty close.
Okay, yeah, somewhere around there. So why don't you give us the highlights of Tom's story again for folks' benefit here that are hearing this for the first time?
Okay, I'll give a quick summary.
Yeah, I think so. Right back from 2005, and then kind of walk through some of the highlights, and obviously let folks know what we're talking about.
Okay, that sounds good. Back in 2005, my husband Tom Leonard was awarded a limited sheep entry hunt into the Spatsuzi Wilderness Plateau Park, and that was a dream hunt for him. It was well thought out, well planned. He knew exactly what he was going to do. He left our house in September, it was a day drive, and was on the mountain on September 11th in 2005. His hunt in total would be about 20 days, but he packed 10 days worth of food with him. And then he was going to do a circle of some sort in and back out. And if all was going well, he would take another 10 days worth of food and continue. If he was successful, he would come home. And he had his quad with him just in case for a backup hunt somewhere else. Back then in 2005, there was no communication devices. So I was not to hear from him for the full 20 days until he came back home. And that is what happened on October 2nd when he was due back. He did not show. Immediately I contacted the RCMP and explained where his truck would be at the Eagle Nest trailhead. And the very next morning they went, and sure enough, his truck was there. So they let me know that his truck was there, and I asked them if they could please look and see if there was 10 days worth of food in the pickup. So they went back the next day and there was. So at that point we knew we had a missing hunter on our hands. So they called Smithers Search and Rescue, and after that date, and firefighters did about a 4-day search before the weather. It was just too dangerous and the weather hampered the search. So 2006, the family went in with quite a few people, about 30 people, and did a search on her own. The RCMP in 2006 did a aerial search as well, and all of those searches, nothing. 2007 and 2008, family also did searches every year. At that point, I knew that it was going to be a hunter that was pretty much mimicking Tom's hunt that would find stuff for us because we were being unsuccessful. And that was exactly what happened. In 2013, a hunter did stumble upon a abandoned camp. At that time, he did not know about Tom's story. He did find it strange that the camp was abandoned and the tent was collapsed. And he looked at it and could describe what he saw. He didn't hear my plea on social media until around 2019. And then he related the camp that he saw to it possibly being Tom's. Unfortunately, it was too late in the year for a search to go in. So in 2020, the RCMP were going to arrange something, but unfortunately it was COVID and the helicopter wasn't available. So in 2021, we attempted again, but again, the helicopter wasn't available. And so the RCMP asked BC Parks if they could do a walkabout, but unfortunately they too were having staffing shortages, so it didn't happen. And it was just year after year after year struggling to get in to investigate this camp that my daughter decided she would do a YouTube video of her father's case. And she posted that in August of 2021. And luckily for us, it caught the eye of a member from Terror Search and Rescue. So they approached us and talked to us and decided that they would go in on our behalf looking for this tent. And they did. Unfortunately, again, nothing was found. So in 2022, Terror Search and Rescue went back 3 times in that year. And again, nothing was found. And that brings us to now.
Right. Yeah, so just a little context for folks. So this is northern British Columbia. The area that Tom drew his permit for, the Stone Sheep, is the Spatsizi Plateau Wilderness area. And it is an absolutely massive tract of wilderness area in the rugged mountains of northern BC. So there's some remote lakes that are either you fly in by float plane, or people will trail horses in from long distances. No roads. It's a massive area, giant valleys, thick forest, in the valley bottoms, and moose willow areas, and then of course the mountain peaks and stuff where the sheep live on it. So it's a massive area, and it wasn't until that hunter found the collapsed tent that you all literally kind of had like a circle drawn on the map of this vast area to say potentially somewhere here, because before it could have been like, where could he have got to in 20 days sort of thing, which would have been a much larger search area. So it's just to give people that sort of a context, it is, man, just a massive piece of area. And people can probably appreciate, if you've been on these types of hunts, that when you set up a base camp, you pack in, you set up a base camp and stuff, like a lot of times we'll tuck our little tents and stuff into a little thicket of forest somewhere, or some little spot or whatever, where it's protected from the elements, windstorms, snow, that sort of thing. So now if you think about Tom having done that, it's, you know, he's probably did a good job at hiding, you know, hiding that. And obviously, you know, like, wouldn't have been, you know, as easy to see from the air, or for somebody to actually, you know, walk into a little area that's like the size of the room that you're in listening to the show or whatever. So very, very challenging place, I think, to look for a missing person.
Yeah, that is exactly what the hunter that found the tent had said. He described the tent location as being outside of the base of the swamp line. And just as you're getting into the immature trees, the tent was tucked up under a pine tree. And if you didn't know it was there, you would walk right by it.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. Jeez. The last couple of years, there was some hunters were in the area and found items.
That was just this year, which is fantastic. The story, since Miranda has, my daughter had done the video, and from yourself and the Wild Sheep Society doing podcasts and stuff, it's helped tremendously. And so hunters that were going in did reach out to me, and three different hunters this year. One, the very first one, that right when sheep season opened up, I opened up my email and the first thing I see is a backpack. It's a camouflage backpack. It's old. It's tore apart. It's in my heart and my stomach. Once I got everything beating again and stared at it, I was just, am I looking at Tom's pack? This is crazy. But the more I looked at it, it had wheels on it. I've never seen a pack like that before. And so I ruled it out as being Tom's pack. It had looked like it had also come, or the hunter had told me it looked like it had come down from a rock slide or a landslide a few years prior to, and it looked pretty chewed up from a grizzly or something.
Okay.
And then there was two more items. Two other hunters had located. One was a baseball cap, and it had the logo of the duck on it. So Tom didn't have a camo hat like that. And okay. Another was a shirt, but it was in an area that I don't think he would have been there. And it, that one was a tough one.
Raises your hopes up and then kind of dashes them, you know, to find, you know, something that belonged to Tom. But in a way, is there a bit of hope in that as well, that people are, one, finding things that are of various ages? They've been through winters, they've been through animals, and hunters who have awareness, you know, to keep their eyes open for that stuff are actually finding, taking note of that and knowing, you know, to reach out to you. There's got to be a little bit of, you know, kind of...
Oh, there's so much gratitude.
Hope around that.
And
yeah.
So much hope. Yes.
Okay. Did I remember this right? Like, did you say that Tom had photographed his stuff before he went on the trip? Or was that something that you provided as a piece of advice?
It is a piece of advice. Yes.
Okay. Because in the longer podcast, folks, we sort of closed it off with sort of lessons learned from Tammy and family and different things about how we could all as hunters sort of like up our game in you know, helping people find us should something like this ever happen. And now I remember your advice was to photograph what you take in, photograph your backpack, photograph all your contents, photograph yes. your boil in your foil meat food bags or whatever. Because I recall you saying that could be the thing that somebody finds is the piece of a foil dinner bag. Yes. And to be able to go back to a record and say, yes, that's
what he's packing. Yes.
Yes. And I just thought that was such a brilliant piece of advice, and I think it's important to share that one again. So
Yeah, with Tom, he had a list, and I had that list, so I know what he's packing.
Okay.
But I didn't have pictures per se, which I wish I had.
Right. Yeah. But general things like color of the tent and color of the backpack and, you know, stuff like that. But yeah, down to the fine details of something that could be the clue, right? Yes. You know, it's I remember that now. That was a pretty good piece of advice. Be curious to know if anybody that listened to those podcasts have actually done that, have taken the photographic record and left it on their computer at home before they go on a trip. One of the things that we talked about on the episode a couple years ago, and some of our communication back and forth on email, is you've played the strong person for 18 years now. For your family, for your girls, every year brings new hope. Every fall has kind of like closed out when the weather settles in with another season gone by. So let me really, really ask you, like, how are you doing, you know, with this each year?
Grief is something that you always carry with you and never goes away. However, a missing person case, it's always unfolding. So the emotions are brought up continuously. And they're as raw as they were 18 years ago. Like that, looking at that backpack, for example, this year, it's good. Don't get me wrong. I want those emails. It's good. But when I reported Tom as an overdue hunter, two things happened to our family that particular day. And one being, I created this steel armor all around me, and it protects me and it makes me my strongest version of my true self. And that strong version, I'm able to talk about Tom's disappearance. I'm able to answer the questions and do quite well with it. And I want people to know that I am stronger than you think I am. And I'm hanging in there. I'm doing it. Because with us, it's not about moving on. It's about coping. And it's about hoping for answers. So I need this steel suit to do that. And then the other thing that happened to our family was the girls and I became like the three musketeers that day. And we stand strong and we're hand in hand and we're going to get through this together. And they're older now and helped me tremendously. And to represent that strength, that three musketeers thing, we actually, all three of us, got tattoos on our ankles. And it's of the swords, and it's the three swords crossing. And the swords crossing means strength, love, and togetherness. And with each other's support, we'll walk through this journey together and we'll find our answers.
No, it's beautiful. That's beautiful. No, I appreciate that you sharing that with us. And yeah, I can appreciate it. I can't say I understand, but I get what you're saying. Like a missing person, you know, situation is different because it's like you said, it's always ongoing. It could be something in your email every day, and you know, maybe a few things each fall comes up. I guess that would just be a very different way to be living, you know, with this. And I think coping is, I guess, the word that
it's
came to your mouth. Yeah.
It's the word. It's yeah. Coping.
Does the fall, when the fall rolls around, you're in a small community, you know, it's not hard in a small community, even if you don't hunt, to kind of know that hunting season's coming, because you see, you know, people with putting their campers on their trucks, or, you know, some folks dressed in camo at the gas station or those sorts of things. And I think you just having, you know, grown up with the kids growing up with it, you being married to Tom, he was a hunter, you know, well before this, you kind of know fall is in the air and it's hunting season. Is that tough for you?
Yes, you're correct. It is tough. But it also brings a smile to my face. It's a memory.
Okay.
But deep down, whenever fall hits, I'm wore out. I'm tired. It does wear on you, and I may not know that it does, but when I'm paying attention to my body, I can tell that it is wearing on me, and I notice that the girls are the same. But when we see a hunter, and that it's not always tears, it brings back good memories.
Okay. Because Tom loved.
Oh, he loved it.
Loved hunting. He loved it. Okay. No, that's beautiful to, you know, to still be able to look at that, you know, have some positive memories and honor, I guess, that it's something that he loved as well, rather than just, I guess, you know, the reason I ask that is just sort of like, is that a painful time of the year? Like, you just wished there wasn't a hunting season. You wished you didn't see people in camo at the gas station, those sorts of things. You just kind of...
For us, we actually wished for hunting season, because that is when people will go to spec season.
Right.
There is hikers maybe throughout the year, but hunting season it's something we do look forward to.
Okay. And up there, that starts in August.
Correct.
So that'll kind of get going mid-August, or yeah, I think it's around the middle of August. That you know, I guess at any point you could be hearing something from August on. So how has the hunting community been in general for you and your family? You know, there would have been Tom's friends, you know, that would be part of the hunting community, the town and stuff. But how has the hunting community treated you and your family through this whole thing?
Amazing. So at the beginning, just me reaching out on social media the way it was, I had coverage, and lots of hunters rallied around me. There was a BC hunting forum online, and I don't know who they are. A lot of people go in there and chat, and they, since 2010, have put my post is like my missing hunter post to remind people is stickied at the top of that page, and it has been since 2010. And from there, people will private message me. They'll just kind of randomly share it as well and get people talking about it again. And surprisingly, even to this day, there will be people on that site that it's been sticking at the top that is, oh wow, this is new to me. So that has happened way back and is continuing. And the first 2 years, 2006 and 2007, I sent letters, and so they could be attached to any limited entry. People who were awarded limited entry, my letter was attached to that when they received their acknowledgement. And I was so surprised at how many people responded to me to say that they did receive it, which was nice. And they would even respond to let me know that they didn't go for the hunt, or if they did go for the hunt, they would respond. So that is amazing. Then Miranda's video came out, and the likes of you, you saw that and you reached out. You're probably one of the first that reached out and offered to do a podcast, and I'm forever grateful, and thanks for this one too. And then the Welsh Sheep Society got a hold of it, and they have quite a large following. Their members have been amazing with donations and things to help Terra Search and Rescue search, as well as Chuck, one of the members, donating a rifle. That probably made up most of the funds for the 2022 search.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was awesome.
Yes. And so, yeah, it's it's been amazing. The people that reach out to me that are hunters, I don't actually know where they're hearing it. But ever since he's went missing, every year I hear from somebody or more, multiple people, and they're all hunters.
Oh, that's awesome. I mean, it's good to hear. Hunters and the hunting community gets a lot of bad publicity, you know, nowadays for various things. But, you know, I think when it comes right down to something that's so important to your family, I think people put themselves, you know, where you and the girls are and want to reach out, want to help, want to, like the Sheep Society, raise some funds, and even the search and rescue folks that have gone up there, you know, and done that work on the ground. I think everybody, I imagine, doesn't think twice about it, because if they were in the same, you know, the same situation as your family, that you know, they would hope that, you know, people would help and call and do that sort of thing. So that's.
Yeah,
Terrace, that's good to hear your thoughts on that.
Terrace has been great, and along with some of the members, not all of them are hunters. There are some hunters, and I think the gentleman that discovered it, I brought it to Terrace, the one member, he himself is a hunter.
So you still have the website, which has got Tom's story up on it. I was looking at that tonight, missinginspatsizi.com.
Yes.
And that is sort of right up to date to this year, just sort of the chronology of events and a few pictures and stuff that that you went through at the beginning of the show. So if people are interested, you know, there are the podcasts, but there's also the family's website, missinginspatsizi.com. So check that out, share that around, you know, and keep the word spreading. Cause I would imagine that's one of the things that you're really hoping for, is that somebody shares with somebody that all of a sudden goes, you know, oh, well, hey, hang on a second. I found this or saw that or something. And it seems to be one of those things where it's going to be this serendipitous way of.
Yes, I something. Think so too. Yeah. One thing that I do really would like to get out there is this camp that had been discovered that we can't seem to find. If somebody by chance, for whatever reason, left that camp and it's their camp, I would love to hear from them.
Oh, right.
Right. Like it can be just that simple. It could be somebody, you know, that has left it, and that would help me out if they reach out to me, or reach out to me if you've been out there years and years ago, back in 2006 or 7, and you saw something that wasn't right, or and you can remember the area. All that information I collect and I mark down.
The picture that's on the website of, there's a camp and there's some snow and a pack, and was that the
that's
camp
Tom's.
That was?
No, that's Tom's.
Okay, so that's from like another hunting expedition somewhere, and but that was his gear.
Yeah, that's
okay.
The tent.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, but that's not how it was found in 2006. Okay, because you said the other hunter had said it was collapsed and stuff, because it had been quite a few years, almost ten years from 2005 to it was 2013 when.
Yeah, when he saw it. Yes.
Okay. Okay, no, that makes sense, the picture now. So yeah, no, that's a really good point. If you go onto the website, there's some maps and stuff that show the general area that's being searched, and it's being grid searched based on where this report came in 2013 of a collapsed tent and some camp materials and stuff. So like Tammy was saying, if that happened to be you or something, and you know, years and years ago you were in there hunting and whatever, snowstorm hit and you just had to grab a bit of stuff and get the heck out, or you were gonna get trapped up there for the winter and you left your gear behind, kind of like they do on Mount Everest or whatever. Yeah. Then I think that would be super valuable information Tammy and family, because then they might be spending a lot of effort grid searching the wrong valley, really, is I guess what your thoughts are, right?
Yeah, there's no proof that that's Tom's.
Okay. Okay. Any advice, asks of people listening? Next steps? Do you still have the GoFundMe account?
I still have the GoFundMe. And yeah, so all the money that has been donated has went to Terror Search and Rescue for the searches. I still have the GoFundMe up for any future searches. It's a very difficult area to get to. So if, for example, that backpack was something that was Tom's or I needed to get in, again, we have to be helicoptered in, and the helicopter costs are so expensive. Mm-hmm. And that's why we can't go every year. Get tapped out pretty fast.
So if you search in the GoFundMe program or the website, yeah, and just search by your name.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. No, we'll stick that up in the show notes as well. So thanks for coming back on and sharing your story. Hopefully, yeah, it maybe falls on the right ears for the upcoming season, and you never know. And that's why I like to do this for you and the family, is the more people that hear about it, the better.
Yes, I'm grateful for all those that continue to not forget about Tom and to carry him with them as we do. And I'm so grateful for those that go out of the way to help us and support our family and help us find the answers we're anxiously waiting. And you're one of those supporters, so thank you.
No, you're very welcome. And thanks for sharing your story. I know it is a tough one to talk about, but you are compelled to do that and to keep sharing that story because you have a job to do, and that's to find Tom and bring him home. So we will continue to follow along every year. Our love to you and mm-hmm. to the girls, and hope you have a good Christmas. And yeah. Remember Tom and honor Tom, and one day we'll have a happy podcast to talk about
one day.
Some good news. Yep. Thanks, Tammy.
Thanks, Mark.